Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today we're talking about the strategies that help you stand out, be seen, and be heard. You're watching Now Media Television.
Welcome to the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis. Today I want to start with a question every entrepreneur, expert, and leader needs to ask. What actually makes authority real? In today's market, authority is often treated like visibility, more content, more attention, more claims. But true authority is built differently. It is built through evidence, consistency, original thinking, and the ability to translate deep expertise into trust people can understand. My guest today is Dr. Nathan Bryan, founder, chairman, and CEO of Bryan Therapeutics, Inc. He has spent 25 years in nitric oxide research, published more than 100 peer-reviewed scientific articles, secured dozens of issued patents, built a billion-dollar enterprise value portfolio of companies, and is now leading clinical stage development around nitric oxide-based therapies for heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, diabetic ulcers, and non-healing wounds. This is a conversation about what it really takes to build authority when the stakes are scientific, medical, commercial, and deeply human. Dr. Nathan Bryan, welcome to the Authority Playbook.
Jeff, thanks so much. Great to be with you.
Great to have you here. I got so many questions to ask you, but as we begin, I want everyone watching to think about the authority you are trying to build in your own field. Is it built on attention? Or is it built on proof? Because today we are going to look at how real authority is earned through discovery, credibility, and the discipline to keep advancing a body of work over time.
Yeah, Dr. Jeff, that's a good question. Yeah, go ahead. Now, look, I think it's a good question. And, you know, we do it the old-fashioned way, and we do it through hard work. And so, you know, people today, I find, aren't willing to put in the work and the time commitment. You know, but for me, I went through, you know, after high school, I got a bachelor's degree in biochemistry from the University of Texas at Austin. I then went to LSU School of Medicine. I got a PhD in molecular and cellular physiology. Then even after that, I did additional training at Boston University Medical Center. So I'm 30 years old before I've even prepared for an independent career in my field. And so a lot of people aren't even willing to put in the time and the work to get to an authoritative voice. But to answer your question, authority is built on proof. And it's built on, you know, becoming kind of an authoritative voice in your field, knowing the field and going through the proper training and the pedigree and the credentials to actually become an authoritative voice.
Dr. Bryan, I need to ask you. So did you wake up one day when you were a teenager and go, hey, I want to go study nitric oxide research?
Not exactly. I wish it was that simple and I had that vision early on. But, you know, look, I think life is a journey, and I think God puts people and places and, you know, things in our life that allow us to pivot. But I had an interest in science and medicine early on, going back to high school. And so when I was working on a biochemistry degree at UT, I had a chance to do undergraduate research. And, you know, I think God has a sense of humor, because once I finished my undergraduate degree, I swore I'd never wanted to deal with nitrogen chemistry again, because it's complex. And then, you know, when I was at LSU School of Medicine, I was introduced to this new science of nitric oxide. In 1998, a Nobel Prize in medicine was awarded for the discovery of nitric oxide, this interesting gas. And so that's where I started this. And I knew that really that was going to be my focus, not only on my professional life, but now even integrating into my personal life, because, you know, 25, 30 years ago, we knew that this was an important molecule, but there were still a lot of unknowns. Like how the body produces it, what goes wrong in people that can't make it. When once it's produced, where does it go? Where does it become, and how does it signal? So a lot of unanswered questions. And, you know, for me, trying to pick any subject matter or kind of discipline in medicine and science, it's, you know, if there's a lot to be discovered, then and there's a lot of potential there. So that was really kind of this journey that led me to this really specified field of nitric oxide.
I think it'd be helpful for our viewers, and honestly, even for myself, help me understand a little bit what effects or what role nitric oxide actually plays within our body.
Well, nitric oxide is a naturally produced molecule. It's produced primarily in the lining of the blood vessels. So nitric oxide is what we call a vasodilator. I mean, when it's produced, it opens up the blood vessels and it improves blood flow and oxygenation and improves circulation. It prevents inflammation in the lining of the blood vessels. It signals our own stem cells to mobilize and differentiate, and it activates the energy producing organelles of every cell in the body, the mitochondria. And so this is how the body communicates. It's a signaling molecule. And interestingly, we're finding in over the past 30 years that when the body loses the ability to produce the single molecule, it's really the earliest event in the onset and progression of all age-related chronic disease, including cardiovascular disease, which is the number one killer of men and women worldwide. So this is a foundational molecule that too few people understand and even know about, even in their own health.
As we get older, it begins to, we don't produce as much nitric oxide as we did when we were teenagers or younger.
You know, that's what the clinical science tells us, that if you take people at different age groups, when you look at their endogenous nitric oxide production, it seems to decline over time. And those data and those studies were published in the 90s. But today we've advanced the science and the understanding to the extent that we don't have to have this age-related decline. Because today I'm 52 years old chronologically, but biologically I'm 29. If we look at comparatively what my nitric oxide production levels are to the normal population. So we know how to prevent the age-related decline in nitric oxide production. And with that, we think and we believe we can prevent age-related disease, the onset and progression of age-related disease. And that's profound, and it's never happened in the history of medicine.
That's awesome. I don't think it's very well publicized in our world today about the effects and what we can do proactively to keep our nitric oxide within our body.
Well, that's what I'm hoping to change, because through conversations like these and through education, building awareness, reaching consumers directly, you know, I train, educate future physicians. In fact, I'm here educating a room full of physicians here in Las Vegas. But, you know, I think to have the biggest impact, we've got to reach out directly to the consumers and patients and educate them so they can take what we've learned over the past 30 years and start implementing it in their daily life. Stop doing the things that we know are clinically proven to disrupt the natural production of nitric oxide, and then start doing the things that we know are clinically proven to enhance or improve the production of nitric oxide. And so, you know, we're on a mission to build that science-based education and awareness around nitric oxide. So I hope to change that. But, you know, you bring up a very important point.
So, Dr. Brian, you've published more than 100 peer-reviewed articles and secured dozens of patents. I'm sure you're very proud of all that, and that those are great accomplishments. How do you think about the difference between having the knowledge and building true authority around that knowledge? Can you differentiate that?
Yeah, look, I come from the academic world where we're involved in teaching and training. And what we try to do is take information and impart knowledge. And then that they can take that knowledge and gain wisdom from it. So it's a process. But if we start with misinformation, you can never get knowledge from that. And you can certainly never get wisdom. So, you know, I'm proud of kind of the personal achievements and professional accolades and achievements that, you know, have occurred over my professional career. But more importantly, it's implementing that knowledge, that information, that wisdom into things that are meaningful, that you can productize, that you can now, you know, provide the education and the strategies to that individuals can make these changes and provide products that actually move the needle and improve people's lives. So for me, that's the greater mission, is to, you know, understand and take the complex science and understand the mechanism of disease to the extent that we can fix it, we can cure it, we can prevent it, and even reverse it. But that's our mission at Brian Therapeutics. That's become my personal mission now, is, you know, because information and knowledge is only important if it's put into action. It's meaningless if it's not able to put into action.
I love it. I love your mission, and I'm glad you have a personal mission statement. And I think that's so important among leaders, and when you want to build your authority, having that personal mission statement and that you live and breathe and you talk about is so important. I thank you for having that. I wish everyone would have one of those in their own lives. You kind of touched upon this all earlier. You know, health claims can spread really quick. Especially, obviously, we have the internet. We got so much information around us. How do you protect the integrity of the science while still making it accessible to the public?
Well, I can tell you, it doesn't make you very popular among your peers or your competitors because, you know, when you tell the truth and other companies out there are not telling the truth, you become a target. You know, unfortunately, in this internet world and, you know, where there's, you know, tons of information out there, but more importantly, misinformation. And so for me, one of my main objectives is to maintain the integrity of the science of nitric oxide. And unfortunately, there are a lot of companies out there spending tens of millions of dollars a year on marketing and advertising products that say they're nitric oxide, but they cannot be nitric oxide because these companies don't understand the true science. And if you don't understand the science, then you really can't provide safe and effective products that address the underlying issue of nitric oxide. And so that's a major challenge of mine. You know, I've been sued by a lot of my competitors and companies and, you know, been come after because, you know, when you go against the grain and what you do is so disruptive, especially to other companies that are competitive to you in the marketplace, then you become an enemy. And they try to take out the enemy. I mean, it's truly the art of war. But for me, it's always about telling the truth and conveying the science of nitric oxide. And, you know, when you tell the truth, it's based on science. And, you know, my number one objective is to build trust with consumers because I have the background and, you know, spent the time in the lab doing the research, learning the science to where hopefully people can trust me as an authoritative voice with one mission, to advance the science of nitric oxide so patients and consumers can be empowered to take control of their own health.
I love your mission. I love that you're standing tall and you're fighting your battle, which helps the world throughout, you know, all the countries to learn something that can help us all at the end of the day. So what stands out to me is that authority at this level does not come from claiming expertise. It comes from building a body of evidence, contributing original ideas, and staying close to the truth even when the marketplace wants shortcuts or they even want to discredit you. We're going to take a short break now, but when we come back, I want to move from discovery into translation, how science becomes therapy, how research becomes a company, and how innovation earns trust in the real world. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Welcome back to the Authority Playbook. Stay connected to this show and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. You're on the move? Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm here with Dr. Nathan Bryan, founder, chairman, and CEO of Bryan Therapeutics, Inc. And now I want to talk about one of the hottest moves any expert can make, turning deep research into real-world innovation. It is one thing to make discoveries in the lab. It's another to build products, companies, patents, clinical programs, consumer education, and market trust around that discovery. In this segment, the conversation we're going to shift and explore to is how Dr. Bryan translates complex nitric oxide science into therapeutic development and consumer-facing solutions while maintaining credibility in a crowded and sometimes very confusing health marketplace. Dr. Bryan, when you move from research into product development or a clinical stage biotechnology, what has to change in the way you think as a scientist and as a CEO?
Well, I can tell you it's a completely different perspective and change of mind, and it's not for the weak of heart. You know, and trained as a scientist, we're trained to make discoveries and provide true solutions to health problems. And so early on at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston, when I filed patents, the university typically takes inventions from their faculty and then tries to license it to existing companies to monetize it because we have a full-time job as faculty. And so what I realized after about 2 to 3 years after my patents were filed and patents were starting to get issued, and there was not a lot of interest in other companies, but I realized early on that the discoveries I'd made could be life-changing. And so I took the perspective that if it's to be, it's up to me. So then I had to be the spark. I had to go out and I started my own company, even as a full-time professor of molecular medicine, and then went out and tried to find funding to support the building of the business. And so I went from academia to entrepreneur, and I tried to wear two hats for a number of years, and then realized that, you know, it's like the old saying, a man who chases many rabbits catches none. And so I had to focus. And so I stepped aside from academia, and that actually took a lot of courage. There was a lot of fear in that because I had a, you know, a good paying job, a promising career with lots of accolades, you know, lots of awards early on, and comfort and a research lab that was very productive. And to step away from that and resign and go into this unknown world of entrepreneurship where success, you know, isn't promised. In fact, 95% of companies fail. But what I did, I believed in enough that I had to go out and I built a company and started making products. And so the challenge and the hard thing in science is taking concepts and theories and actually developing a product behind that concept and theory that actually works. And so there was years of research and development and finding manufacturers who could make a solid dose form of nitric oxide gas. And we had prototypes, so to bring it back to the lab, test it, do clinical trials in humans to see if it moved the needle in clinically meaningful endpoints. And so you have to move away from the scientific curiosity never leaves me, I don't think. But you have to change your mindset from how do you build a successful company? How do you bring in the right people that share in your vision and your mission, who want to change the world? And so it's completely different field. It's completely different kind of skill set. You know, I have no formal training in business, but you know, what I do know is how to build relationships and how to tell the truth and how to convey a complex science into something that people can trust and people can take our products and know that they feel better and know that it's working because we've done the hard work and done the clinical trials to demonstrate to them that it's doing what it's designed to do.
You know, you talked about going from the corporate world to the entrepreneur world, and many of our viewers have done that. And it's a definitely, and I've done that too, to be honest with you. And it's a scary stepping stone from having a comfort, like you talked about, of a salary, paycheck, having a job, and now you're on your own trying to build your own company and, you know, trying to substantiate and bring in, you know, the more revenue than what you ever did before. And when, especially when you're trying to discover a product like what you're doing, how do you actually, you know, just think about the process of bringing something to market from idea to the potential to having a therapy to a consumer product, and that it's actually worth bringing it to the marketplace and going through clinical trials? What steps do you actually go through?
Well, you have to have an all-in attitude and go in and be 100% committed. And, you know, it's scary. Now, there was a time when I stepped away, I was 3 months behind on mortgage. We were broke, didn't have it, but I kept my head down and I believed that what we were doing, and a strong faith that what we were doing was the right thing. But no, you have to do it right, especially coming from academia where we're designed and trained to develop drug therapy, to go through the rigor of clinical trials, to show a mechanism of action, to show that the basic science is strong, but more importantly, to take that basic science and translate it into clinical medicine, into consumer products, and show that it has a clinical benefit. And, you know, this takes many, many years and millions of dollars. And as a startup company that you're trying to bootstrap, you don't have the financial resources to do that. So sometimes it takes a little bit longer. And then, you know, when you start to do this and get the message out. But, you know, for us, it was even more difficult because, you know, the nitric oxide market in the early 2000s was non-existent. And I always say that we provided a solution to a problem that people did not know existed. So we had a product that people didn't know they needed or even why they needed. So then that's where my background really came in, because I had to go out and educate the market, create the market for the product that I developed. And so if you're entering a market that's an established market, then that's completely different. But to go back and look 15, 20 years ago, when there wasn't a market for anything that I developed, and you had to create the market. We became the market leaders, and I became the authoritative voice in that market that's now, you know, continued, you know, 20, 25 years later. But you have to do the hard work, and many companies, many people don't want to put in the work. And this takes years and years of work and dedication. And, you know, most humans want immediate gratification, and that typically doesn't happen. And I'm by nature an impatient person, but this has taught me to be extremely patient and to, you know, go through the rigor and take the time and the effort to do it right. Because if it's worth doing, it's worth doing right.
So you, Brian Therapeutics, you've developed nitric oxide based therapies in the areas like heart disease, we talked about Alzheimer's, non-healing wounds. I got this almost like a two-part question. Can you dive into and let our viewers understand a little bit more about the definition of a non-healing wound is, and how important is nitric oxide to the therapeutic pathway that we need?
Well, you know, I got into this, the wound healing aspects, by treating my dad. My dad's a paraplegic from a car accident in 1984. So my dad's been rolling around in a wheelchair for more than 40 years, and he develops decubitus ulcers or pressure ulcers. And, you know, in 2014, he developed a non-healing wound that, you know, he almost died from. It got infected. He was septic, put on IV antibiotics. And once we got the infection under control, I started taking him to wound care docs to try to heal the wounds. And all the wound care clinics I took him to said, you'll never heal this wound. He's old, he's paraplegic, he's diabetic. And under those conditions and comorbidities, this wound will not heal. And I just refused to accept that as a son, that, you know, he needed help and the medical system had failed him. So I started developing a nitric oxide releasing dressing that I would put into the wound bed, produce nitric oxide gas, and get blood flow to the wound bed, mobilize stem cells. And within 6 months, we completely healed a four-year-old non-healing wound. And all the doctors, wound care specialists were amazed at it. And so that's got me into wound care because, you know, today 60,000 Americans die every year in nursing homes from wounds that become infected. And to me, that's unacceptable because nitric oxide will heal wounds. And so non-healing wounds, there's not enough blood flow to the wound. It's isolated from your immune system. They become chronically infected. Our antibiotics don't work because there's no blood supply to get to the site of infection. And so when we apply nitric oxide, we establish blood flow to it. We recruit capillaries. We what's called a hyperemic response. Nitric oxide is antimicrobial. It kills the infections in the wound bed. So to heal a wound, you need to kill the infection and get blood supply to the wound. And that's exactly what nitric oxide does. And that's what we're seeing in our clinical trials. But whether it's, you know, we talk about heart disease, Alzheimer's, or non-healing wounds, it's all about blood flow. Because every age-related chronic disease, whether it's heart disease or Alzheimer's, there's reduced blood flow to that organ. When there's reduced blood flow, there's reduced oxygen. And if you don't get oxygen and nutrients to cells, they can't do their job. And then in Alzheimer's, you get proteins that misfold. And then you can't recall your memory. And you get amyloid plaque and tau tangles that build up. And that's Alzheimer's. But Alzheimer's is a vascular metabolic disease. And if we restore blood flow to the brain, oxygenate it, get nutrients, and we improve insulin signaling in the brain, then Alzheimer's goes away. Nitric oxide addresses the root cause of heart disease, Alzheimer's, and non-healing wounds. And that's why we're so excited about our drug pipeline with Bryant Therapeutics, because it addresses root cause.
That's awesome. I'm going to ask a question before we get to our next break. Is nitric oxide a preventative that we should be taking prior, or is it meant to be used as once something comes on?
Well, no, medicine is a reactive practice, and we're trying to change that because, you know, people only go to the doctor once they get sick, and then they're reacting to something that they should have addressed proactively. But no, what we're finding is that if we can maintain adequate nitric oxide production through diet and lifestyle or even taking our consumer products, then we're proactive, we're prophylactic, we're preventative. And that's our approach because it's much easier to prevent disease than it is to treat it, cure it, and reverse it once you get it. So that's the conversation that we're hoping to change, is to be proactive, be prophylactic instead of reactive.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for clarifying that for me. So what I hear in this part of our conversation is that innovation is not just an invention, it's a translation. It's the ability to take complex science and move it through systems, research, protection, development, education, and trust. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, I want to go deeper into the entrepreneurial side of this playbook, how Dr. Bryant built companies, created enterprise value, and positioned science as both a mission and a business. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
If you are an entrepreneur, founder, thought leader, a consultant, or expert trying to scale your authority, this is the segment to lean into, because expertise alone is not enough. The question is, can you build a structure around it that can create impact, protect value, and earn trust? I'm going to continue our conversation with Dr. Nathan Bryan. And now I want to focus on the business architect side of scientific authority. Dr. Bryan has not only contributed to nitric oxide research, he's built companies, developed patented technologies, authored books, commercialized consumer products, and created a billion-dollar enterprise value portfolio. This segment should connect authority positioning with entrepreneurship, showing how experts can move from knowledge to intellectual property, from IP to platform, and from platform to market leadership. Dr. Bryan, when you think about building that billion-dollar enterprise value that you have, what business lessons did you have to learn that science alone could not teach you?
Well, it's the people you surround yourself with and the people you hire. Because successful companies are built on successful people and a reflection of the people that you hire. And, you know, I've had to learn some really tough lessons of, you know, aligning myself with some really bad people early on and, you know, had to learn some really, really tough, expensive lessons. But, you know, for me, and, you know, sometimes your missions aren't aligned and people and business partners want to come in and their number one objective is how do we make the most money in the shortest amount of time? And for me, that was never my drive. Money's never been a driver for me. You know, I was poor the majority of my life. And so, you know, I always said money's only important if you don't have it. And so my mission early on and coming from a completely different place than the people I aligned myself early with was I want to develop products that change the world, that change people's lives based on the discoveries we had made. And it was much less on, you know, how do we make the most money in the shortest amount of time? But and again, that goes back to science and science-driven products, science-driven technology. And, you know, because these discoveries were made in an academic environment, there's royalties that have to be paid on the patents and the technology, and there's licensing deals that have to be done. But again, this is a tough road. This is the rough road. This is the path that many people don't want to take, but it's the right path. But for me, once you learn that and go through that process, you hopefully learn from those mistakes and those experiences and then align yourself with the right people and, you know, dictate the control and the strategy and the long-term vision for the company. And then once you establish that, my role now as chairman and CEO is to hire the people, the right people with the right skill set that more importantly, share our vision and share our mission. And so that's completely different. I mean, it's not that different from academia, where obviously you got to hire people in the lab that have the skill set to do the experiments and have the proper interpretation of results. But, you know, discovery is much different than business and productizing or bringing to market products in a market that doesn't exist. And so, you know, it's much more complicated. It's much more, you know, it requires a different skill set. But to me, it's all about, again, like I said, telling the truth, building relationships and building trust.
I think you hit upon so many key issues in that answering that question. And the key thing I want to focus really initially is people. Come from the mentality right now for many companies that I speak to is don't tell me what to do. I know what to do. I'm the boss. But I think the mentality that's coming out more and more of the successful companies is to surround yourself with smart people, learn from them, make sure that they know their expertise. You have the vision. You got the foresight of where you want to go. So surround yourself with people that can do the things that maybe you're not the best equipped to do. Would you agree with things like
for
that?
Sure. No, absolutely. Look, and I never ask anyone to do something that I wouldn't do myself, whether you're in the startup phase where, you know, I took out the trash, I cleaned the office, I washed dishes. You know, you wear many, many hats. And even today, as we've grown and we're a much larger company than we were, you know, years ago, I never ask people to do something that I don't do. And I never want to be seen as the boss, and I don't allow them to call me the boss. Yeah, I'm the leader. I'm kind of the visionary, and I set the strategy, but it's the people that execute the strategy. And so, you know, I don't hire people who are doing this to earn a paycheck and are doing it for the money. To work for us, you've got to believe in what we're doing. And, you know, there's very few jobs out there where people work for, where they can go home at night and say to themselves, today I changed someone's life. Today I changed the world. And when people work for us, they see that because we get emails, phone calls, text messages of people that we've changed their lives because they heard about this. They heard about our product. They heard about something I said about, you know, simple lifestyle changes, and it changed their life. And if that's not motivating enough, then I don't know what is, because when you change someone's life, you change the world, and you've certainly changed their world. And there's no greater feeling, no matter what job you have, than knowing that you've improved and impacted someone's life. And that's the very unique position we're in. And, you know, we don't take that for granted. And I remind all of the people who work for us that don't take that for granted, because there's very few other jobs or, you know, career decisions that allow you to do that.
You who are leaders or our managers in the world today, what Dr. Brian just talked about is 100% correct in my mind. Take those things to heart, implement them in your own companies, in your own management styles, and it will help you be more successful as you move forward. Thank you for sharing that. But I also know that as a founder and CEO, you need to balance your scientific integrity with the pressure to scale, commercialize, and compete. How do you do that? How do you actually manage those three?
Well, I've had to learn to say no a lot, and that's a change for me, because, you know, before, you know, 10 years ago, I never said no. I took on all projects. But then what I realized is if what I'm doing is not contributing to our long-term vision, then I don't implement it. It's, to me, it's just noise, and it's a distraction. And a lot of people intentionally try to distract you. But now as the market is emerging and there's companies out there who are trying to distract from us and put out deceptive, fraudulent marketing, you know, it's important to me. It's not important. It's critical that we maintain the integrity of the field and stick to the real science of nitric oxide and still create products that address the root cause of nitric oxide deficiency, safely and effectively restore nitric oxide. And certain there are ways we could cut corners. We could create cheaper products and have better margins on them. But that's not our goal. And, you know, we have to maintain the integrity and some degree of responsibility in the field. But no, those distractions come all the time, and it's temptations. But, you know, as a man of faith and a man of God, we resist temptations. And I do it in my personal life, and I do it in our professional life. And there are a lot of distractions out there, and a lot of people come to you to try to get you to take your eye off the ball and distract you so they can send you in the wrong direction. But that's just, it's principled, and it's intentional about everything we do.
What you talk about is awesome. I wish I had some of the expertise in the education that I would be able to be a contributor to your organization, to your company. But I also know that there are a ton of experts who have deep knowledge, but they don't really have the business structure that they grew up with. And you didn't either. You kind of learned it as you got thrown into it, for lack of a better phrase. But what should people kind of understand about turning their expertise into a scalable authority platform?
Well, number one, believe in what you're doing. You know, there's three levels of conviction. You think, I believe, and I know. And if you think, then you're not there. If you believe, you're not there. But you got to know and know what you're doing is the right direction. And then it's all about building relationships and surrounding yourselves with people you can trust, the people that have a different skill set from you and that, again, believe in what you're doing. And, you know, I'm not a finance guy, but I've surrounded myself with really smart finance people and accountants and, you know, other business leaders who deal with the daily kind of grind of it, who love doing that. And so it's all about, again, finding really smart people in their skill set that what it takes and bringing those people together. And that's what it takes to grow a big company, a successful company, and maintaining a good culture. Because one bad apple can spoil the bunch. And that occurs in people and organizations all the time. You bring one bad person in, and, you know, this happened to me, and I was slow to fire. When everybody in the organization said, you got to get rid of this person. And, you know, and it almost killed our organization. And so, again, a very painful learning lesson and experience that, you know, I'll never repeat. But again, I think it's people, it's relationships, it's surrounding your people with the skill sets you need that you don't have, and then getting them to buy into your vision and believing in what you're doing. And you don't need an MBA to do that. It's all about building trust and an army of people that believe in what you're doing.
Having a bad hire is so costly to so many organizations, and sometimes the CEOs or whoever the hiring manager is, I'd rather get somebody in here than having nobody. And I guess we all learned the hard way that that's more costly sometimes than leaving having that vacancy another couple of weeks or even a couple of months to find that right person.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, I think sometimes my heart gets in the way of my brain and reason, because, you know, we've hired people in the past who were down on their luck, who were unemployed, you know, at risk of losing their house, couldn't support their family, and they didn't have the skill set that we were looking for. But, you know, we brought them on. I brought them on to help them out, thinking, you know, perhaps we could fit a square peg into a round hole, and it doesn't work. And so we have now, as we grow and we scale, and we realize that that's not, I don't think, ever the right choice, that we have to be more deliberate and slow to hire, but more importantly, I think, fast to fire.
Yeah, the costs of non-performance or hiring the wrong person is not just the salary that you're paying that person. It's everything else that goes along with it, from the morale that you talked about. Hiring the wrong person is costly, morale, delays in production, and so forth and so on. So I definitely thank you for sharing all that with us today. So this reminds me that the authority becomes a little bit more powerful when it's structured around things. A strong idea needs protection. A discovery needs a pathway. A company needs to have discipline. And the marketplace needs trust before it follows. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll close with the impact, the future of nitric oxide science, the responsibility of health leadership, and how Dr. Brian wants people to understand prevention, performance, and human potential, the three Ps. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with more insights and frameworks to help you elevate your brand and your influence. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and this is the Authority Playbook on Now Media Television. Let's dive deeper.
Stay connected to the Authority Playbook and every Now Media TV favorite, live or on demand, anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and in Spanish. You're on the move, on the go. Catch the podcast version at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and today I'm with Dr. Nathan Bryan. And as we close, I want to focus on impact. What does nitric oxide science could mean for the future of health, prevention, chronic disease, and how people think about their own biology? This final segment should elevate the conversation from personal authority in business to success to public responsibility. Dr. Bryan's work sits at the intersection of molecular medicine, biotechnology, consumer health, and education. The takeaway should be that authority is not only about being known, it's about using expertise to move people towards better decisions, better health, and a better understanding of what is possible. Dr. Bryan, when you look at the future of nitric oxide-based therapies, what possibilities are you most focused on right now?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, we're focused on ischemic heart disease. We've got a drug. We're moving into phase 3 clinical trials for heart disease. We're developing a drug for Alzheimer's, and then, you know, our topical drug for diabetic ulcers. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. That's just where we're starting. Because here's what we know from the sciences, that every age-related chronic disease is due to a loss of nitric oxide production. Because when you lose the ability to produce nitric oxide, you lose regulation of blood flow. And then that tissue or organ becomes inflamed. And then it leads to oxidative stress and immune dysfunction. And so every age-related chronic disease, whether it's Alzheimer's, you know, even autoimmune disease, heart disease, pulmonary disease, liver disease, kidney disease, there's four common denominators. There's decreased blood flow to the organ, there's inflammation, there's oxidative stress, and there's immune dysfunction. And nitric oxide addresses all of those. Nitric oxide dilates the blood vessels, so you're going to get better perfusion of the organ. It decreases inflammation. In fact, I have a number of patents on methods of reducing inflammation with nitric oxide. And we correct the oxidative stress that we see in all diseased tissue. And we reverse the immune dysfunction that you see in heart disease, in Alzheimer's. So the future of medicine is dependent upon nitric oxide. And so as we start developing these drugs, we're going to see, you know, safe and effective drugs on the market. I predict that physicians will use, you know, our ischemic heart disease drug, which I predict will be the first to market, you know, for other indications off-label. But for me, it's about designing clinical trials and delivering the right dose of nitric oxide in the right dosing regimen for a specific indication. Because the dose of nitric oxide we need to treat heart disease may be different to treat Alzheimer's, and at what stage of Alzheimer's we're treating that patient. And then it may be completely different for a patient in heart failure or pulmonary hypertension or renal insufficiency. So we'll start to address each of those, but here's what I, again, I know. I don't think, I don't believe, I know that the future of medicine and the health of all Americans and really people around the world are dictated by their ability to produce nitric oxide and the amount of nitric oxide that their body is being produced. So as we start to not only develop safe and effective drug therapy, but people start to use our consumer products, our toothpaste, our mouth rinse, our skincare products, our dietary supplements, and restore their body's ability to produce nitric oxide, then hopefully, as they start to implement these things, there's no need for drug therapy. Because Thomas Edison said centuries ago that the physician of the future will prescribe no medications, but will rather focus on root cause, dietary lifestyle changes. But we've gotten so far away from that in medicine that it's time to get back to the basics. And if we give the body what it needs, remove from the body what it doesn't need, maintain adequate nitric oxide production, the body heals itself. And in that paradigm and in that model, there's no need for drug therapy. And that's the goal. It's going to take us a long time to get there because we're going up against some very powerful forces in big pharma and medicine and the American Medical Association, because medicine is a for-profit business. And you know, big pharmaceutical companies make money by getting people on drugs and keeping them on drugs for the rest of their life. That's not our goal. In fact, our goal is just the opposite.
So does this have to get FDA approved also to go to get to the marketplace as you develop new products?
Well, the drugs obviously have to go through FDA. We have to get FDA approval for drug therapy, but we've got consumer products on the market that we've had on the market for decades, you know, in terms of dietary supplements for skincare products. And, you know, we make a nitric oxide friendly toothpaste now because we recognize, my research lab and others identified oral bacteria probably 15 years ago that are responsible for the production of nitric oxide. So when you kill the bacteria by using fluoride toothpaste or antiseptic mouthwash, or, you know, 73% of the water supply in the U.S. has fluoride in it, and it completely sterilizes the human body, kills all bacteria in the body, on the body. And so we now know that anything that disrupts the microbiome causes human disease. So simple changes like getting rid of fluoride in your toothpaste and switching to our nitric oxide microbiome-friendly toothpaste enhances the body's ability to make nitric oxide on its own. And then when you start taking our consumer products that restore the production of nitric oxide, then people get better, blood flow gets better, blood pressure gets more normalized and supports healthy blood pressure. And then sexual function improves, memory improves, physical performance improves. And people are motivated when they see changes, and they're more apt and more committed to sticking to it if they notice changes, because diets typically don't work. People get on diets, they're yo-yo diets, they get off diets, they lose weight, they gain weight, in fact, gain more weight when they get back. But when you understand that products that we developed are addressing kind of the basics of normal physiology and disease prevention, then you can start to see changes, feel changes, and people are motivated to stick to it. But it's really, it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not, you know, an end-all, be-all, cure-all. You still need to exercise. You still need to eat a balanced diet in moderation, eliminate processed foods, a lot of sugar foods, eat good protein, good fats, and get out in the sunlight 20, 30 minutes a day. And sometimes it can be that simple.
I'm curious. So the products that you talked about today from toothpaste and the other products, are they sold in my supermarket? Are they sold over the counter? Do I need a prescription? If I wanted to go buy them today, what brand or how do I find them?
Well, our consumer brand of products are under the N101 brand. It's the letter N, number one, letter O, number one.com for nitric oxide. The chemical formula for nitric oxide is NO for nitric oxide. So it's N101.com. We're not in retail because, you know, consumers purchase on price. And, you know, in the supplement and beauty space, you know, if we've got a $60 product sitting next to a $10 product, nitric oxide, people buy on cost. And those $10 products don't work because they don't understand the science. And so we're a direct-to-consumer business. We're on Amazon, but, you know, we've got a lot of violators on Amazon that are selling fraudulent products. So we encourage people to go direct to the website, n101.com. You don't need a prescription for these. They're consumer products. We make a fermented beet powder for energy and performance. We've got our N101 nitric oxide lozenges. We make a skincare line of products for aesthetics and beauty. And again, we've got dozens of published, peer-reviewed, placebo-controlled clinical trials on all the products that we bring to market. So they're scientifically validated. They're clinically proven. to work. And that's what makes us different than any other company and any other products out there.
I'm going down a different line than I probably would normally go, but I'm just curious for our viewers, is there a nitric oxide that I should start with at a certain age? Is there something I should be doing better at 50 versus I was at 70? Provide us some education from people who are thinking about how I actually start using nitric oxide to help me.
Well, no, it's a very good question, and the question we always start with, because, you know, my goal is to not to sell you supplements. It's to give you the information you need to maintain your own nitric oxide production. So I tell people, you got to do two things. Stop doing the things that are disrupting the body's ability to make nitric oxide. And so what is that? It's fluoride in your toothpaste. It's fluoride in your drinking water. It's using antiseptic mouthwash, things like Listerine, Scope, the alcohol-based mouthwash. It's things like antacids, the proton pump inhibitors, the Prilosec, the Prevacid, Nexium, Omeprazole, Pantoprazole. Those drugs completely shut down nitric oxide production. And then eliminate sugar from your diet. So if you do those four things, eliminate sugar, get rid of fluoride, stop using mouthwash, and get off antacids, now you've released the brakes on your body's ability to make nitric oxide naturally. And then you can activate it and stimulate it. 20 to 30 minutes of moderate physical exercise a day. Nasal breathing. If you're a mouth breather at night, do mouth taping, but do nasal breathing. Practice deep breathing, meditation. 20, 30 minutes of sunlight a day. And then do an 18-hour daily fast. I've been doing an 18-hour fast every day for the past 7 or 8 years. And that, you know, Americans are overfed. We eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, we snack, we graze in between. And that's not the way the human body is designed to be. And so these are things that are common sense, they're actually cost savings that can have a dramatic effect on your health and basically improve the natural production of nitric oxide. So that's always first. But, you know, there are kids who, my kids take my products. We got older people that take our products and then start to implement these changes and these common sense strategies that, you know, we've been invoking and proving clinically for the past 25 years. But that's the key, is stop doing the things that disrupt it, start doing the things that promote it.
Thank you for sharing all that, because I think it's to me, I've learned so much about nitric oxide in our short time together, Dr. Brian. I'm sure I would like to follow up with you, and I'm sure if our audience would like to find you, what's the best way for them to reach out or learn more about you and Brian Therapeutics?
Well, number one, I'm all about education. I encourage people to subscribe to my YouTube channel. It's Dr. Nathan S. Brian Nitric Oxide. We put out science-based information, true science around nitric oxide, so you become better informed and make better informed decisions on products you're buying and things you may be doing. And then I'm on LinkedIn, Dr. Nathan S. Bryan. You can follow me on Instagram, Dr. Nathan S. Bryan. I encourage you to read my latest book called The Secret of Nitric Oxide, Bring the Science to Life. It's nathansbook.com, or you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or wherever books are sold. And then for those interested in the product technology to try products, it's n101.com. That's the letter N, number one, letter O, number one.com.
Well, I personally would like to thank you, and on behalf of everybody that's been listening, we want to thank you, Dr. Brian, for joining us and sharing your insight on nitric oxide science, the biotechnology patents, the product innovation, your entrepreneur journey, and what it takes to build authority that is grounded evidence. What this conversation reminds us is that the real authority is earned over time, which you've definitely have proven. It's built through contribution, building your credibility structure, and having the courage to keep translating complex ideas into meaningful impact. And to everyone watching, we invite you to keep building that authority with substance, not noise. Keep creating trust before attention. Keep leading with proof, purpose, and the discipline to make your work matter. Dr. Brian, thank you again for joining the Authority Playbook. I'm Jeff Brandeis, and stay connected, everyone, for more on Now Media TV. Thanks for joining.